tradition and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
Welcome back. We have a lot happening during this hour. Andy Staples joins the show. It's been a while since we've had a chance to talk to the star of, I think it's called the Andy Staples Show. I've been a guest on there, but I did not write it down after I went off. Good afternoon, Andy Staples.
Hey, Paul.
What's happening in your world?
Well, in Gainesville, I flew back home today, and there are decommitments happening all over the place. So lots of cruton news, but everybody just keeps calling and asking me about Texas A&M because it's just so fascinating. Somebody just paid a $76 million buyout, and how do you follow up on that? Like, how do you hire the next guy after that?
It's a good question, and I want to ask you about both, but you said something interesting, and I saw some of that going on today, and one thing I keep hearing about Billy Napier is how well he is recruiting right now, and you juxtapose that with the previous guy who's now a talking head. So if they're losing commitments, the question is why, and can it be stopped, and if it can't be, what else?
Well, that is the issue, Paul. There's a quarterback in Willis, Texas named DJ Lagway, who's been kind of the linchpin of Florida's 24th class, and he's been a true believer in Billy Napier. That's the one I'd watch because he's given no indication that he's going anywhere. And I think if they land him, they're probably still fine. But then you start to wonder, if there's any more bleeding, what are you dealing with? Because you're not getting the results you want on the field. But the one thing you could say is you're recruiting at a level where you're getting people that Georgia wants and Alabama wants and Texas wants. But now you've got a situation where the guys who are in your class, well, Georgia flipped one and Texas flipped one, and Auburn flipped one. And that's a problem. So now Florida may flip some back or flip some from somewhere else, but we need to see that happen. And obviously that very important quarterback needs to make sure he signs as well. I think that would make Billy Napier a bit safer. But right now, as they're barreling toward potentially 5-7 because they play Missouri and Florida State next, they need some good news.
They do, and I know a lot of Florida fans are hoping they get that very quickly because the good news on the field has been pretty well spaced out lately. Let's get to Texas A&M. Andy, you talk to people all over the country. Give us what it looks like. Is there any way to frame what this coaching search is going to be?
So it's not one where they fired Jimbo with an idea of, we want this guy. This is the person we're going after. Which is exactly what happened when they fired Kevin Sumlin. They fired Kevin Sumlin, and they knew they were getting Jimbo Fisher. This is completely different. This isn't working. We're going to conduct a full-on coaching search and see what happens. Now, Dan Lanning fit all the criteria they were looking for, but he very quickly shot it down. He's not leaving Oregon. I wrote this column the other day. Basically, Oregon passes a two-question test that if you answer yes to both questions, you probably shouldn't leave unless it's for, Alabama, Georgia, or Ohio State. And the two questions are this: is my job in the SEC or the Big Ten? And Oregon's a Big Ten job as of next year. And then, can I finish regularly in the top three in one of those conferences? And the answer for Oregon, yeah, you can finish regularly in the top three of the new Big Ten. So he's in a really good spot. Now, he's got a massive buyout as well. But, if you're looking at it from Dan Lanning's perspective, it's probably easier to make the playoff year after year at Oregon than it would be at Texas A&M, because Texas A&M's never been able to get over that hump. Oregon probably will be one of the top three or four programs in the Big Ten when it gets there. A&M's got to deal with Texas and Oklahoma coming in as well, just making that even tougher to get into that top three or four level. So I understand where Dan Lanning is coming from in saying, hey, I'm good here. I like it here. But that means that you just, if you're A&M, you're just casting the net out. You've got Jeff Traylor at UTSA, who's a Texas guy, former Texas high school coach. I think everybody who has a job should be looking at Lance Leipold at Kansas, because he's one of those people that just wins everywhere. He, 6 national titles in Division III, turned around Buffalo, turned around Kansas, which was an absolute disaster. And another guy, Paul, that I think people should be looking at if they have an opening is Jed Fish at Arizona. He's done a phenomenal job, because what he took over at Arizona was probably as close to as bad as what Lance Leipold took over at Kansas. And he's got them winning now and recruiting at a higher level. Because what Fish did, which is interesting, it was not all portal. He put together a great first full recruiting class, and that's most of their starters right now.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. He's an impressive guy, both to meet and to watch coach. But is that the kind of coach that these guys who run Texas A&M want?
Well, they hired the guy who had a national title, who put him over a barrel, and you know, because he had all the leverage, made it where they couldn't do anything except pay out $76 million. So that didn't work. So maybe try something else. I mean, you look at A&M, there've been a couple of times where they've tried to hire the person with the dominant record who had been ultra successful. It was, you know, Jackie Sherrill when they hired him from Pitt, and Jimbo Fisher, and neither one of those worked, you know? So I think they really just need to find somebody who feels like they fit, somebody who can recruit the state of Texas, and really it's not even the state of Texas. You need to be able to recruit the best players in the country, because they aspire to national titles at Texas A&M. They have the resources to do all this stuff. They just, for whatever reason, have never gotten over the hump. But they need to recruit the same players that Georgia recruits, that Alabama recruits, that Ohio State recruits. And so, Fish is an interesting example, because in college, he's worked at Miami, he's worked at Michigan, and he's also worked for the Patriots and for the Rams and for the Vikings. And so he's kind of worked everywhere. So that one would be interesting. But, you know, the trailer thing, I understand where that would be enticing too, because you have a guy who would be great at recruiting Texas. And I think they just have to decide what it is they want. Do they want to be Texas-centric? Do they want to go nationwide and just go get the best players? I think nationwide get the best players is probably the way you win national titles now.
A little bit of a different situation in Starkville. What are you hearing about Mississippi State?
Well, Jamie Chadwell was not in Starkville when he tweeted last night. Someone has photoshopped a Jamie Chadwell tweet to say that it emanated from Starkville, Mississippi. I find that so hilarious. So Jamie Chadwell's the coach at Liberty. He was at Coastal Carolina before that. He is somebody who I would imagine that Mississippi State wants to talk to. But you got to have some common sense here, guys. Head coach interviews never take place on the campus of the school that's doing the hiring. It is usually at the most nondescript Sheraton near a big airport that you can possibly imagine, or maybe at the coach's house where he is now. But yeah, I think Mississippi State has some good options, because like Chadwell would be one. John Summerall at Troy has, you know, coached really good defenses there and taken that program to the Sun Belt title already. I think you have to call Dan Mullen, your colleague at ESPN, because we know he knows how to win in Starkville. I don't know if he wants to go back into coaching, but we know he can do that job really well. But he's also really good on TV, so he may want to stay that. Matt Berry says that they're not allowed to do it. I think Matt has to be chief of staff. So, you know, he can't break up the tag team.
I don't think I do think he wants to go back into coaching, and I may be off base here, but I don't think he's going back to Starkville.
he's good at coaching there, Paul.
Well, he is good, but I think the parting was less than friendly.
Well, listen, they thought he was going to stick around. Tennessee and Florida opened the same year. They both wanted him. I don't blame anybody for taking that giant bag of money. I think
No, I don't either, but there was more to it than that, and it's none of the audience's business for me to empty out dirty laundry from Stark Vegas. But I
will say, Paul, that Mississippi State has a lot of good options. Willie Fritz is another one at Tulane. He's another guy who has won literally everywhere: Central Missouri, Sam Houston State, Georgia Southern, Tulane. Like he would be good anywhere. Now he's 63 years old, so you have to decide, are we okay with that? But if you are,
he'd only be at the beginning of next season, he'd only be 10 years younger than Saban, so he's too old.
Exactly. See, but I really think Zach Selman, the new AD at Mississippi State, has a plethora of good options, and really that he just has to decide what he wants, because that's a unique job where, you know, you need to be good at evaluating, because the Mississippi kids tend to be under recruited and poorly evaluated. And if you're good at evaluating them, you can have a much better roster than your recruiting profile necessarily suggests.
Where will where will Jim Harbaugh be coaching next year?
That's a great question, Paul. Because you got to think about this case. So you saw that the Big Ten, in all their communication with Michigan, laid out some of the evidence that they had. The NCAA is still investigating the sign-stealing stuff. And remember, the NCAA is also still investigating an earlier recruiting case that he served a three-game Michigan-imposed suspension for. So they had a plea deal in that case, essentially, that got turned down by the Committee on Infractions that would have had a four-game suspension. So we can reasonably assume that they're going to add more suspension to that particular case, and then there's going to be this one where it doesn't even matter if he knew or not, because of the way the NCAA's rules are written now. The head coach is responsible for everything. They can stick the head coach with almost anything as long as they have proof that somebody on his staff did it. So I think you could be dealing with a fairly long suspension. And so he may want to try to get an NFL job, which he's tried to do the last 2 years. And look, if I'm the Bears or the Raiders or maybe the Chargers open, this is a guy who was really successful in the NFL. I'd at least give him a look. But then if you're Michigan, you got to figure out, okay, how long might this suspension be? Is it something that we can just ride out and then Jim Harbaugh comes back when it's done? Or is it so long that we have to just do something different? Now, I would argue that so far we've seen four games that Jim Harbaugh has not coached, and they've looked pretty good in all of them. So I don't even know if it matters how long the suspension is. Maybe they just do the rotating interim thing again.
He'll still get paid for this season, even though he's only coached, 60% of it. Andy Staples, thanks so much. Always great to catch up with Andy Staples. We are heading right now for the break, and we'll be back in a moment.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are back here on a Wednesday afternoon. Ryan is up next in Tennessee. Hey, Ryan.
Hello. Big fan, long time listener. Called plenty of times, first time getting through.
Thank you very much.
An honor to talk with.
It's our honor to talk to you.
I have the number in my contacts. The contact picture, of course, is you raising out of the coffin in the Tennessee jersey. There's a few things I'd like to talk about, and you don't have all the time in the world, so just but a few different things I'd like to talk about. One, Ric Flair, of course. Two, Josh Dobbs, and the greatness that is him, and then three, the nobody's really talking about the Schrader kid, the right cross on the pass rusher. I hadn't really heard anybody talking about the right cross early in the game before he had, 300 and something yards against Tennessee's defense there. Wanted to get your thoughts on that.
I think, I don't think Ric Flair is really worth the time to talk about. You mentioned Josh Dobbs. I can't remember, it was the last time we were in Knoxville. He was supposed to be a guest on our show, and then suddenly he got called up. And I don't know anyone who's had a more remarkable 6 weeks in recent NFL history than him. I mean, it is stunning to watch, and everyone who knows Josh is absolutely thrilled for him.
It seems like just a great guy, a great role model.
Yes.
I mean, he's never never any negativity, always positive. And I mean, I feel like he's not gotten the opportunities he deserved. I'm a huge Titans fan, and I feel like when he came in, before the Vikings thing, when he came in for Tennessee, not even knowing the playbook, and so he came in and he played as good a quarterback play as we've had for some years. And then of course we let him go, which just that's I mean, that's our system. That's what we do. You know, if you play well, we'll send you off somewhere else, to Philadelphia usually, but.
Hey, well, thank you very much for the call. Really good to hear from you. Let's check in with Paul in Florida. Hey, Paul, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir. I just have a couple quick questions. I'd like to know, I think Oregon State is going to upset Washington this Saturday, and I think that Jonathan Smith would make a great coach for Texas A&M, and I think Florida should fire their coach and go after Oregon's head coach.
Yeah, you know, Dan Lanning's a name that I think he's going to stay there. It's hard to walk away after what you built. I mean, certainly you lose the quarterback, but you can always get another quarterback at Oregon. Thank you for the call. Bob is in Fort Worth. Hey, Bob.
Yeah, afternoon, Paul. How are we getting along?
We're doing great. Thank you.
Well, the big search has begun.
Where's it going?
Well, I don't know, but I know the first nibble is in the water. I was told today by a very reliable source that the defensive coordinator from Georgia is on campus today.
That's Glenn Schumann?
Yes, sir.
You know, Bob, I can't argue with you because you're there and I'm not. But considering it's Wednesday, the odds to me of thinking practicality that the Georgia defensive coordinator would go to campus 3 days before a game in Knoxville just, quite frankly, would floor me.
Well, I didn't see him, Paul, and I'm out in the middle of New Mexico. But I was texted
and
by...
Let me tell you why he wouldn't do it. First of all, it's unethical. And I just don't believe... You probably... may have gotten that from John Sharp, for all I know. I am going to say I don't believe that based on my many, many years of reporting that Kirby Smart would allow it, that even the Texas A&M people would want it. And secondly, there's no reason while the season is going on for him to go on campus. There just is none. I mean, what does he need to be on campus for? If they're interested in him, they know his resume. They can meet him in the privacy of his home in Athens.
Well, I understand.
Okay, I am just giving you. I always hate to do that because you're often wrong. But I am going to state very firmly, I don't believe that.
Paul, while we got you on there, you had a lady on there yesterday talking about all these buyouts and where the money's going and the math department's not going to get what they're supposed right. to get and stuff. I don't know who this lady was, but next time you talk to her, tell her the math department and the English department at A&M aren't worried about their funds.
I will mention that to her, Bob. Thank you very much. And just... back to what we were talking about, this is the season for rumors. Everyone has a friend, and you believe it? I mean, I don't believe it. Does anybody believe it?
No.
By the way, it can be checked out very quickly and easily. Just go ahead and text Kirby Smart and ask him. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Me back. Certainly, we are a week and a half away from the biggest game of the year in college football. Stephen Means joins us to talk about the team he covers, the Ohio State Buckeyes. Stephen, always great to catch up with you. We'll get to the game next week in a minute, but I'm particularly interested in how the world of Ohio State has been watching and consuming and processing for 3 weeks the Jim Harbaugh story. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Paul. I think it's a combination of, yes, we want Jim Harbaugh punished, but also we want to be part of the punishment, right? I think given the way the last 2 years have played out for Ohio State, you lose two games in a row to Jim Harbaugh in Michigan, some of the things that have been said out of the Michigan camp over the last 2 years about Ohio State's program. And obviously we saw Ryan Day explode a little bit on Lou Holtz when he said some things, had some choice words for about Ohio State's program before the Notre Dame game. I think fans want all of it. They want to beat Michigan next week. They want to do it in Ann Arbor. And then they want to have to be able to look Jim Harbaugh in the face and say that they beat him. And then they can send him off on whatever punishment the NCAA or the Big Ten is going to come up with. So it is a combination of please punish a dude who I think has been responsible for why they've lost the last two games, at least from a fan perspective, while also wanting to be a part of that.
Does it matter, or have you already telegraphed your answer by saying they really want to look across the sideline and see Jim Harbaugh next week in Ann Arbor?
I think it matters, especially if they win. I think whether obviously the program itself has been on total lockdown in terms of talking about anything about that subject, unless they're trying to correct something that's factual or infactual or anything like that. But I think everybody involved here from a fan base perspective and from a program perspective wants to be able to have their day in the sun, be able to say some things. But none of it can be said, none of it can be done until whatever happens next Saturday in Ann Arbor.
Well, you mentioned that they want to beat him and look at him in the eye. Stephen, I realize I'm getting ahead, and I know there's a game this week, although I personally don't care about the Minnesota game. would it be worse, though, if Ohio State lost to a, you know, coach, whatever his name is, who jumped up and down and cried after the Penn State game?
I think regardless of whether Jim Harbaugh is on the sideline or if Sherrone Moore is the acting head coach that day, a loss almost makes this worse, right? Because right now, if you're Ohio State, you have this ability, if you're fans, to say that, oh, the only reason Michigan has won the last 2 years is because they were involved in this, you know, let's stop sign stealing controversy that's going on right now. But if Michigan, if now that's known and Michigan is quote unquote not doing that anymore and they still beat you, especially if they beat you the way they've beaten you the last 2 years, then it almost backfires on you, right? Then it's like, oh, we can beat you whether we're cheating, I guess, or for lack of a better way of putting it, or if we're playing by the rules that you're supposed to play by, either way, you can't beat us. So it's why it's almost from a fan perspective that they have to win. Because then you can chalk up those two wins and chalk up the reason C.J. Stroud never beat Michigan to this thing that's going on right now. But if you don't win, then it's just more fuel to the fire that Michigan fans already have over you because of what happened the last 2 years.
Yeah, Stephen, I was talking to somebody the other day on an interview, and the game came up next week, and I was just rambling. I said, Ryan Day needs to win this game. And the guy said, well, what do you mean he needs to win? I said, I actually said this, and then I stopped. I said, I think he's going to be on the hot seat if he doesn't. And then I thought about what I just got through saying. I mean, the guy has even lost 10 games now in his career at Ohio State. But it just seems like you lose to Michigan 3 years in a row, and that's a bad look at Ohio State, is it not?
Yeah, it is. It doesn't necessarily put him on the hot seat, I don't think, because so much has changed, right? I understand Urban Meyer never lost to Michigan. But a lot of those Michigan teams weren't very good. And I understand Jim Tressel only lost once to Michigan, but a lot of those Michigan teams weren't necessarily, outside of a couple of years, competing for national championships every year. This Michigan era, they're playoff contenders, especially now as we get into the 12-team playoff next season. You're not dealing with bad Michigan teams who are trying to overcome bad hires. These are good football programs, and you're just losing a game. But from a social perspective, it does look bad to lose three times in a row. It's been quite a while since a head coach was able to say, hey, I've lost to Michigan three times in a row. But I think the changing landscape of college football here, obviously with the Big Ten expanding next year, the SEC continuing to expand next year, the 12-team playoff, a lot of the reasons why it was so important to beat Michigan, all the cultural stuff and the rivalry stuff will still be there, but you don't have to beat Michigan to go play in the Big Ten championship game. Heck, you can lose to Michigan, and then the very next week play them in the Big Ten championship game and win that game. And then it's like, okay, which game mattered more? The one that was for a trophy or the one that was at the end of the regular season? And unless something crazy happens at Ohio State, I don't think anybody is worried about them getting into a 12-team playoff every single year. So I do think fans are going to have to live in this world now of you can lose to Michigan in a given year and yet still accomplish the two other goals that you have set out for yourself, which is winning a Big Ten championship and potentially winning a national championship, or even getting further in the playoff than Michigan does. So I think if you were talking 10 years ago and you're saying, hey, a head coach at Ohio State has lost three straight games in Michigan, I think he would be on the hot seat. I think he'd be on the hot seat right now with two straight losses. But because so much else has changed, and because, as you mentioned, he's only lost a handful of games and they have all been to championship caliber teams, it changes how you have to view the job he's done here at Ohio State.
Well, he can't lose this year, because and with Ohio State going from 1-2 last night, what would a loss mean next week? Because this does not look like last year, where Ohio State still was able to sneak in.
Even if they would have kept that number one ranking last night, I think I'd still feel the same way, where it's going to take a lot for one conference to get two teams in this year. I mean, the top five right now are all undefeated teams. And four of those five are going to be undefeated conference champs, unless somebody just drops the ball over the next couple of weeks here. So a lot had to go right in 2022 for Ohio State to backdoor in, right? USC had to lose to Utah. That doesn't happen. And the best game C.J. Stroud ever played as Ohio State Buckeye never exists. I don't know if all that is going to line up perfectly for whoever loses the Ohio State-Michigan game to get in, because now you're asking, okay, you got to jump Oregon, who those only losses to Washington, who might be able to, you know, redeem that loss here in the next couple of weeks. Washington might be undefeated. Florida State might be undefeated. So it's this one, they got to almost had it. Ryan Day described it as getting new life last year. I don't think that new life is going to come for whoever loses that game on next Saturday.
Stephen, let's talk about Marvin Harrison Jr. for a second. A lot of people in our viewing audience believe Jaden Daniels should absolutely win the Heisman because of his numbers. His team has three losses. Tell us how you view Marvin Harrison.
I mean, I don't want to say he's a front runner, but I think it's an interesting case for the guys who are in the conversation, right? You just mentioned Jaden Daniels. Well, his case is all his performance, because his team's on a playoff team, and it's been a while since, obviously, Caleb Williams did it last year, not being on a playoff team and winning the Heisman Trophy. But in this playoff era, especially over the last 4 or 5 years here, the Heisman Trophy winner has been from a playoff team. And Marvin Harrison Jr. is on a playoff team right now, as things are headed, depending on what happens next week. I think he's pound for pound the best player in college football. I think it was him and Brock Bowers in that conversation, and Brock Bowers missing a few weeks maybe takes him out of that conversation. But listen, Ohio State's offense hasn't been what it's been the last 4 or 5 years that we've come to know under Ryan Day. But what's been the constant here is Marvin Harrison Jr. They beat Penn State because they had Marvin Harrison Jr. and Penn State didn't. If they beat Michigan, a large portion of the reason why is going to be because they have Marvin Harrison Jr. and the other team doesn't have it. I don't know how many other players in the country are in a situation like that, where a game boils down to one team has this player and the other player doesn't. I think that's the case. And that's the case. Ohio State continues to push for him out there. And obviously, from an NFL draft perspective, he's probably the best non-quarterback prospect, maybe the best prospect overall. But the impact he has on whether that Ohio State wins a football game or not is so magnetized in a way that I don't even think Devontae Smith was this important to Alabama. His stats were better, obviously, especially once Jaden Waddle went down. But the level of importance he's meant to Ohio State's offense, I think that pushes him over the top of even some of the quarterbacks in this conversation.
Great conversation with Stephen Means. Many thanks, Stephen. We head to the break right here. More to come a little bit later on. It's been a fun show, and we are back right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
David is up next. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. How you doing today, brother?
Hey there, David.
Doing great. Good deal. Well, I've thoroughly enjoyed the show. It's been awesome, with about the exception of about four goofballs that's called up so far. But
hey, David,
I've got,
Randy just said only four?
Well, I understand. I've got one just comment, and then it's a question, but then I have just two yes or no real fast questions for you.
Sure.
Have you heard from Matt from Texas this week?
We heard from him early in the show, yes.
Okay, I wasn't able to be on right when the show started. So, obviously, he's on the nice list because he sat on Santa Claus's lap and got his coaching change. So, I wanted to ask you this. Georgia hadn't looked real good on the road this year. So, going to Tennessee this weekend, I don't believe Tennessee can beat them, but can Tennessee cover the 10-point spread?
Maybe. I mean, I'm not giving you a very good answer because I think it would be a moderately decent game, and that's not exactly a sell on the game. But Tennessee has played extremely well at home. That's all you can base it on, and seems like they could squeeze that number down. Thank you for the call. Rachel is up next. Hey, Rachel.
Hi, Paul. I'm a Gator fan, and I just don't know, like, I don't understand what happened to giving coaches chances because, you know, Rome wasn't built in just one day, and I really do believe that Billy really does deserve more
Rachel,
chances
I'm gonna
than
Gator.
I'm going
to jump in here quickly because deserve is not really what this is about. This is about trajectory and what Florida fans see. Now, again, the season has two more games, but if Florida loses both games, what is that record, 5-7?
I believe so.
And that's with a surprising win or two. I mean, I'm not trying to go. I mean, a lot of things happened during the season, but I mean, this could be a three-win season. Florida beat South Carolina, maybe a four-win season. That was a 50-50 game at the end when Florida won. But I really they gave it back against Arkansas, so I'm going to take that one. I mean, recruiting is what it's all about. If he continues to lose recruits, that's going to put pressure on the administration there. And I think he has to win one of these next two games to feel good about next year.
And we will. There's no question about that.
You will what?
We're going to definitely beat the Noles, too. That's okay. No question.
Well, I think there is a question about it, but thanks for your optimism. Johnny B., I hope you do. Johnny B. is up next.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call. Just talking about trajectory with these coaches. I think Oregon State, the guy Jonathan Smith there, he's 44 years old, and he, in the 5 years there, he's done a pretty impressive turnaround, if you ask me.
Yeah, I can't think of many places more difficult to win than there.
He's, you know, I just, they look at all the things, and I was thinking he's had the third 10-win season last year. They're currently 11th ranked. He's had 59 all Pac-12 guys, 7 All-Americans, 151 Pac-12 all-academic honor rolls, 8 put in
the
NFL,
are you,
17
are you
NFL signees. Did I lose you?
No, I just asked if you were related to him. I wasn't expecting you to give me his.
No, I'll tell you how it happened. I used to be on one of your affiliates, 95.5 FM. Hoodie runs out of Hackleburg.
Right.
And there was a guy that lived there in Oregon, Beaver Joe, okay. And he sent us all kind of swag.
Hey, by the way,
I know
Hackleburg, Johnny.
Yeah, I saw a picture of you eating there.
Long story short, about a year and a half ago, my brother-in-law's got a farm in Hackleburg. And my wife and I and he and his wife went to lunch. What was the name of this place?
The Rowdy Hog?
Yeah, the Rowdy Hog. Exactly right.
Yep.
The Rowdy Hog. And,
yep, you've got that?
It was really fun. We had a great time.
The road.
What's that?
I said, you got that or the Mexican place across the road?
Yeah, no, it was the Rowdy Hog.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to throw him in there.
Pictures,
you know, at his
Randy
age and what he's got in Oregon,
Alabama,
I think that's
imagine.
Impressive.
Well, thanks, Johnny. But, yeah, it was a fun. It was pretty memorable. Somebody put it on their Facebook page, and I had people saying, you had lunch at the Rowdy Hog? I think I had a baked potato. Good baked potato, by the way. I want to take Dwayne the next time I go to Hackleburg into the Rowdy Hog. Dwayne?
You going to take me there, Paul Bamba? Huh?
Barbecue place in North Alabama.
You going to take me to the Rowdy Hog? Hey, guess what I've seen at Texas A&M at College Station?
Who's that?
Paul Feinbaum, I saw you there. Interview for the coaching job, huh? With the AD, huh?
Nah,
you and the dog.
See me. You didn't
I seen you walking with the dog.
Me. I interviewed.
Yeah, that was you. Somebody looked just like you did.
I interviewed at the airport. I never went into the town.
Yeah, the interview. You and that dog, they had you walking with the dogs on the campus.
You know who I was with?
With Lassie.
You know who I brought with me to be my defensive coordinator?
Who your Matt, defensive coordinator is?
Matt House.
Man, Now that garbage, that boy. That's a garbage can, man. You sure you want to be your defensive coordinator? You want Matt House, huh? They might have it. That fuck, hey, that defense might give up 800 yards a game. You get that man. Hey, who you want for your offensive coordinator? Who you want for your offensive coordinator?
I want Joe Brady.
What? Oh, Joe Brady from Buffalo Bills?
Yeah, it'll be Joe's ninth job in the last 4 years. Joe Brady 4 years ago was the hottest offensive coach in the country when
he's garbage now. Right. And he's garbage.
He is. Hey. Yeah, I agree with you.
And they got rid of Ken Dorsey because they thought Buffalo offense.
Ken Dorsey because they had too many men on the field and the guy made the field goal. That's why he got rid of him.
Hey, Ken Dorsey was throwing all the interceptions,
Dwayne,
too.
Dwayne, I changed my mind. I don't want to be head coach. I want Matt House to be
head coach. Hey, get me. Hey, get out. You don't want to be head coach, buddy. Huh? Get Houston Nut. Get that Nut man.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.